and he'll be a fetch. I should be able to keep you safe for that long.
No. He sold his weave self to Diodatus. She gestured towards the screen. The person that the pressure men work for. I'm going to find a way through them and rescue Dieter. And I'm going to need your help. If we fail, he'll die a true death. She remembered how afraid her brother had looked as he told her he could be building an army. And gods know what else will happen. Her protector froze. Then the room shook, and he was back at the televisions. He turned to her.
I'm sorry about the reset, he said, smiling gently.
I'm very limited. I'm here to keep you safe, but I can't do much more than that. I think you must have just told me something I couldn't process, he chuckled. Still, I'm sure the real me'll be back soon, and in the meantime, I'll look after you.
It was then that Leela realized that she was still stuck in a dream, but it wasn't hers or the pressure man's. It was Dieter's. Her rescuer saw her confusion, but misread it.
Is the name thing a problem? He asked. It is confusing. Why not call me Dit? Then it'll be easier to keep us separate.
He turned back to the screens.
This is remarkable, he continued.
When Leela didn't reply, he glanced towards her and again saw that she was upset.
What's wrong?
He asked, reaching out. Are you okay?
She tried to tell Dit about Dieter selling his weave self and risking true death 3 more times before she accepted that it was beyond his ability to take in. And every time he reset, she had to work a little harder to pull him away from observing the pressure man. When he reappeared for the 4th time, he didn't look round at all. She sighed, accepting his limits.
You really should come and see this, he said, rapt.
Leela sighed.
It's extraordinary, he continued. He's really doing a number on you, or the copy of you, that is.
He bent forward and peered at one of the screens.
Let's call her Lee. Come and have a look.
I don't have time for that, replied Leela, standing up. They'll go after Ambrose, maybe Cassiel too. I've got to warn them.
Can't leave while the pressure man's here, replied Dit. Only exits through the flat. He'll spot you.
God's sake! What use is that?
More secure.
I wish Dieter had talked to me before he built this, grumbled Leela. There's really no way I can get past him.
None that I can think of.
She remembered how quickly the caretaker had broken the flies. Maybe I should attack the flies with the spray, then see if I can get past him.
You'll give away your hiding place and me, Dit told her firmly. All you can do is wait until he leaves. Until then, you're perfectly safe.
And perfectly stuck. Dit ignored her. She slid off the stool and joined him at the screens. Cathode ray tubes nested in plastic and wooden boxes. They looked archaic. She peered at the swarm spattered across Lee like an explosion of ink.
Those creatures scare me far more than the pressure men, she said.
Dit twisted a dial.
Let's check one of them out.
Images shifted as he zoomed in. Caught a fly hovering in midair. Red-orange compound eyes bulged dully out of a small, hard head. Black legs hung from a stumpy little body. It bristled with dark hairs. Leela flinched.
It's fully weave-aware, commented Dieter. Interfaces with the virtual as easily as the real.
I know.
Leela remembered the flies scuttling across her skin, then digging into her.
Disgust shook her.
It's forcing full weave overlay. Dit nodded towards the screen. It looks natural, but it's not. Let's see what's really there.
He pulled out a keyboard and started tapping away. The fly remained unchanged.
Rejecting my overlay drop requests.
He typed out a string of commands, then hit the return key.
And let's see what that does.
The fly darted out of shot.
Motherfucker, cursed Dit. Rejected that too. And I can't go in with anything harder. It'll realize I'm more than just a standard home security system.
Leela remembered the white silhouette in the hospital. Can you see what the pressure man really looks like? She asked.
No, replied Dit.
Same problem. And what are they doing to Lee?
She remembered the flies scratching at her. They were in my memories before you pulled me in here.
Nothing good, replied Dit. He thumped the keyboard and the camera zoomed out. Lee was barely visible beneath a hard, glistening insect skin.
They're going deep, rewriting her past.
Like psychoactive tech does?
He frowned.
This is certainly how it works. Rearranges memory blocks, edits them, fabricates new ones. But I've never heard of anything like this. It's always been in ancient artifacts, not flies riding a retro thug.
He thought for a moment.
Yes, he really is the worst person you've ever brought back to the flat.
Leela whacked his shoulder.
For God's sake, Dit, how did you even know that? You said you were just a user interface.
I've been checking up on you two every so often since I was created. Watching a fetch and a geek hang out together.
Dit chuckled.
Better than a sitcom. And Dieter copied all his favourite memories of you into me, to make sure I'd really care about you.
And annoy me as much as him?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty important too.
Leela smiled ruefully.
When I see him, I'll tell him you're not bad at it.
Positive feedback, always welcome.
Before I give him a good telling off for not letting me know about you.
Dit snorted.
Well, there's a lot you haven't told me. What were you doing in the Shining City in the first place? How did you meet Diodatus and the Pressure Men?
Leela thought about trying to explain.
She imagined him freezing and disappearing, then having to restart their conversation from scratch.
I think it's outside your scope, she said.
Dit looked sad.
You've already reset me?
Leela nodded. Several times.
I'm sorry. I am quite limited.
Well,
you've kept us both safe. That's the important thing, she sighed. I just wish I could get out of here.
She forced herself to focus on what she could control.
Can we see which memories the flies are rewriting?
A lot from the last few weeks. And he's dipping in and out of longer-term ones, too.
Let's start with the more recent stuff.
A thought struck her.
Perhaps you'd better not watch it. It might trigger another reset.
Ah, out-of-context info. Okay, I'll go on percentages. See where he's making the biggest changes to Lee's memory.
He worked quietly for a minute or so.
Putting them up on screens. Only you can see them.
There was a pause, and then times passed, pulsed out at her.
This is what he's editing.
Leela watched the rewritten past. Each screen held a different looped moment. Many were relatively short. Others ran for a minute or so, some even longer. Each was silent, until she focused on it for more than a few seconds. Then sound would spring out and surround her.
I've picked out a top 10 of recent memory changes, explained Dit. Should give you a sense of what he's up to. I'll summarize the longer-term stuff while you're watching them.
Leela thought at first that the flies were only rewriting anything to do with the Diodatus payment. It had been a jagged break in her life. They made it something far smoother, far more integrated.
In the hospital, a new fictional Dieter explained the situation to Lee.
I've done it for you, he said, to make up for not being there for so long. Please accept this gift from me.
He took her hand in his.
Don't try and bring me back again.
She saw another her, a lie, nodding acceptance. The final seizure came. There was no summons to the twins, no doctors desperately trying to resurrect him. Lee watched briefly over his still form, then gathered herself and left. She visited Ambrose. He confirmed the terms of the insurance, but there was no shock.
I already knew, she said.
Ambrose replied.
So generous of him.
Then she met Cassiel, who assured her that everything was in order.
Diodatus are very reputable, the mind told her. Very well established.
The last thing she said was, there's no need for us to meet again. The wake was still a sad affair. Guests muttered about sacrifice.
He always said, just live your life for yourself, one of them told Lee.
Ambrose was there. He looked broken.
Don't look back,
he advised.
That's what he would have wanted.
He offered to show her one of Dieter's favourite historical sites.
Something to remember him by.
Then Lee was standing in the Mikhail room. Drops of fire fell around her like memories.
flaring brightly, then sputtering into nothing.
He loved places like this, replied Ambrose,
his face lit up by the dead god's branding. A few minutes later, he was gone, leaving Lee to remember her brother.
At least you came good in the end, she whispered into the darkness. There was no grief in her voice.
Getting anything out of it all? Asked Dit.
Lena had almost forgotten that he was there.
Yes. The pressure man wants to stop me from kicking up a fuss about something. Something very big. Something I'm not going to walk away from. That's my girl, exclaimed Dit. I've never known you back down from a fight.
Can I see the older stuff?
Dit nodded.
Here goes. Heavily compacted. It summarizes years of changes very quickly. You'll get the big picture, but you won't get much detail.
Then the new past hit her. A thousand memories spun together to form a single, re-edited life.
Minutiae rushed by.
Leela felt that she was moving across a vast, open landscape at very high speed. Slowly, its geography emerged. She perceived a vast absence. All of it hinged on a single moment. There was Lee, aged 11, standing in an apartment block corridor that reeked of piss and cheap drugs. Her neat little backpack and her fresh, clean school uniform made her feel out of place. She had a container of food in her hands, all ready to be warmed up, and a door had just slammed in her face. There was an unbearable sense of loss and betrayal. Leela dropped out of Lee's false pass, gasping with shock.
Are you all right? Asked Dit.
Fine, fine.
She felt his hand at her elbow.
Gods!
What is it?
He's wiped Dieter out of her memory. Almost all of him.
She found herself about to choke out a sob, a nod towards the screen.
Making it look like he moved out when she was 11, started squatting and never came back, told her to fuck off when she tried to visit him.
She felt grief heave within her. She imagined a deep bitterness, too.
Dieter abandoned her. She had to do it all on her own. If the flies had got me, that's all I'd remember. I'd take the money and just let him go, and I wouldn't care about any of it.
Thank the gods I was here then, said Diet perkily. We'll soon get all this sorted. There's less and less editing going on. I think he's almost done.
Leela sighed.
Hang on, said Diet. I'm not sure I like the look of this. The pressure man's active.
What's he doing?
He's accessing your social networks, running a full search on Dieter's name. Any references to him in chats? Diet peered closely at one of the screens.
Scraping full identity and contact details for anyone you're close to and have discussed Dieter with.
Why does he need that? Asked Leela.
There was an answer in her mind, but she was resisting it. She hoped that Dit would convince her of something less painful, less intrusive. He didn't.
Simple enough. He's just rewritten Lee. She's a new person. And that new person isn't compatible with your old friends. Her new version of her life is very different from the one they remember. So he's doing something about it. He's going to send the flies after them, too.
Oh, fuck! I have to get out!
If Diodatus won, then Dieter wouldn't just disappear from her future. He'd vanish from her past as well. She had to fight back somehow. A thought struck her. What about the flat's administrative weavelings? Can you send me out through them?
Through the wardrobe or the fridge?
He smiled absently as he accessed the appropriate memories.
Yes, I think I might be able to. Move you through their weave space, so you won't have any sort of presence in the main parts of the flat. He might still see you, though. Have you got anything to protect yourself with?
Leela waved the fly spray at him.
There's a skull face, too.
Dit nodded.
And where should I send you once you're out?
Ambrose.
Are you sure? What if he's been attacked, too?
Dieter's defences kept me safe from the pressure man, replied Leela. I'm sure Ambrose's will have protected him, too.
He's not virtual.
Look, if there is a problem, if I even hear a single fly, I'll jump straight out.
She barely felt the anxiety that even the thought of jumping usually created. There were far more important things to worry about.
Dit still looked nervous. If there's psychoactive tech involved, Holt should know about it. He's an insect, but he's got some heavy resources. Or you should go back to the coffin drives. The Fetch Counselor can sort you out with a ghost cloak. Dieter built it for him. It'll keep you invisible anywhere in station.
No, replied Leela.
But Dit's question had set her thinking. She wondered about rushing to her friends. Perhaps she could protect them. But she could only reach them one by one. And she wasn't sure how much that would actually achieve. She thought about returning to the coffin drives to find the Fetch Counselor. But the coffin drives weren't under any threat. She remembered Cassiel's message. The mines seemed to be safe too, for the moment at least. There was still only one real choice.
Send me to Ambrose, she said,
and then to herself so she didn't reset Dit again.
We'll work out where the Shining City is, and then we'll get Dieter out of there.
Chapter 15. The jump still sickened Leela, but now that sickness seemed like an indulgence. She shut it off. Determination eclipsed any emotional shock as her new location leapt into being around her.
Ambrose, she called. Are you there?
His defences were still up. They'd queried her as she had arrived. His office was quiet and dark. He deactivated its weave overlay. There were no flies and no pressure men. And there were no bookcases, no log fire, no armchairs and no antique desk. In reality, his office was a small, cheap, windowless space. Metal shelves hung from concrete walls, holding chaotic piles of printouts. The armchairs were cheap plastic recliners. The table was plastic too, its garish surface pocked with cigarette burns. The room smelt damp. Leela thought of the cozy hours she spent chatting with Ambrose in here, and sighed. She wondered how well she really knew him. The door to his living quarters was open. Pushing through, Leela found herself in a narrow corridor. Without the weave, it would no longer end in Ambrose's comfy, exquisitely decorated little flat.
My castle, he always called it. Drawbridge up, safe from the world.
But now, concrete walls and floors sat grey beneath an unpainted ceiling. Fluorescent lights parched the colour out of them. Leela moved down the corridor, feeling disturbed. She readied herself to jump away at the slightest hint of pressure man presence. She opened the door into Ambrose's living room. Grief echoed out towards her. Someone was sobbing. Dread took Leela's heart in its cold hands. She thought about fleeing, but she couldn't abandon Ambrose. She pushed him into taking her to the satellite, then moving beyond it. She had to help him. The sobbing continued. She touched her pendant for good luck, spun up the skull face, gripped the fly spray and moved cautiously into the living room. Hello, she called. Ambrose! The weeping eased. The living room's true self was as cold and hard and impersonal as the hallway. Ambrose sat at a little table, looking small, sad and grey. Without overlay, his hair drifted in greasy streaks across a shiny scalp. His face was less cheerful, less confident. His eyes were dull, unpolished stones set in dark rings of exhaustion. His skin made her think of damp putty. He hadn't shaved for a couple of days. His shirt was unironed. She could smell stale sweat. There was a half-drunk bottle of Docklands whiskey and a small, dirty kitchen knife on the table in front of him. The skull face asked if he was a potential target. No, she told it.
Here I am, Ambrose said.
He looked hopeless.
My father said you'd come for me.
He picked up the knife.
So I got this from the kitchen.
His words had a slight slur to them. His hand shook. Leela took a careful step towards him.
Of course, she said.
We went down together. We escaped together. Now we're safe together.
Safe,
he replied, pain in his voice.
Safe. Perhaps we are.
He looked at the knife.
You know, I've only just realized this can't stop you. Stupid of me. But I always was stupid. That's what Father says, anyway.
Why would you want to stop me? She asked, taking another step towards him.
Stay back! He thrust the knife towards her, then looked at it, then laughed bitterly.
He put it down on the table.
You see? There it is. In my hand. It couldn't hurt a fetch. I didn't even think.
And in a more confiding tone. I don't think. Father says that too.
I never did, he told me.
Leela wondered what had taken root in Ambrose's head. Your father came? She asked.
Yes, replied Ambrose. I remember him so clearly, standing right where you are. He told me that I've always been stupid, that I don't think. That's why he never reinstated me.
He paused for a moment and took a shuddering breath.
I always had hope. The back door. I thought they left it open on purpose to help me.
He looked up, his eyes pleading for understanding.
He said the door was an accident, that he'd shut it down. He made me turn off the overlay in here. Face the truth of my life, he said.
The knife shivered in Ambrose's hand.
He told me about you.
His voice cracked into something close to a howl.
About what you'd become.
What do you mean? Asked Leela. I'm me, just like always. She took a cautious step towards him and spoke, making her voice as soothing as possible. The pressure men have been here. They've written new memories into your mind. A second step. One of them tried to do it to me.
Oh, no. No pressure men.
He suddenly looked much sadder.
Just Father.
He rubbed his finger across the blade.
I sharpened it, you know.
He looked up at her.
He said if I was quick enough, I wouldn't have to face you.
A sigh.
I couldn't even get that right.
Guilt and shame shivered across his face.
It's so hard to look at you and what you've become. It's my fault, Leela. I'm so sorry.
I am what I've always been, Ambrose. She remembered how the flies had rewritten Lee's memory. She wondered how Ambrose's memories of her had been changed. Dieter left defenses. A partial version of himself. It kept me safe. The pressure men didn't get anywhere near me.
I saw you, Leela. I saw what they did to you.
A sad laugh.
Here I am, talking to you as if you're still the person you were. And that part of you is just a mask now, a lure, to get me back down there.
No, Ambrose, that's wrong. A false memory the pressure men forced into your head. She took another step towards him.
I'm still the Leela you've always known. Your friend, Dieter's sister, uncorrupted.
And you are right. We still have to find the Shining City again, but not to trap anyone.
We've got to get Dieter back.
Another step.
I can't do it without you. No!
He shouted, his voice suddenly harsh. His mood changed so quickly. It was as if his personality had been smashed, then too hurriedly reassembled, leaving jagged discontinuities it was so easy to trip over.
Stop! Don't get any closer.
He thrust the knife out again, then realized what he was doing. Another broken laugh.
That won't scare you, will it?
Suddenly the knife was at his own throat, pressing into skin.
This will.
No, gods, no. Leela stepped back, her hands up, until she felt the wall behind her.
I'm sorry, she gasped. I won't. I mean, what could I do to you? You want me to get back to Dieter's workshop and rewrite me? Have me working for the pressure men? Like him? Like you?
She scrambled for the right words. You have to trust me. I'm not working for them. I'd never work for them.
Of course not, he snorted. I watched Dieter strap you into one of those chairs of his so they could remake you.
The knife moved against his flesh.
Both of you lost, and it's all my fault.
That's not what happened.
I shouldn't have been so scared. I should have gone to him in the hospital. I should have tried to get that fucking box out of him. I should have done something. You and Dieter, gone like Cormac's family. And it's all my fault.
I haven't been rewritten, Ambrose. I'm still me. I still love Dieter. And we need to get back there and save him.
Stop fucking saying that!
He roared. His throat pushed against the knife. A thin line of blood appeared. Leela wondered about using the skull face to stun him, but that would only confirm his sense of her as an enemy. She had to try and talk him round.
Oh, stop it, Leela, he continued. Admit what you are,
he groaned.
My father tried to help me, told me what to do. I didn't do it. Now here you are, and I have to face you. Stupid, stupid, stupid me!
Ambrose, your father wasn't really here, Leela said desperately. Someone else was. Something else. I've had a visit too. A single bead of blood rolled down Ambrose's throat. Leela had no way of getting the knife off him. I crashed back to my flat. A pressure man came and tried to rewrite my memories, make me believe that I'd accepted Dieter's true death. It was difficult to tell if Ambrose was taking any of it in. That I didn't love him, that I had no reason to save him. Ambrose's eyes were glazed. Leela imagined his glitch mind reaching for memories that were no longer there.
But we can't save Dieter. There's so little of him left.
Now it was Leela's turn to shout.
Don't say that!
Then, more quietly, it's not true. We're going to get Dieter back, Ambrose. You and me together. She was near tears.
And you've lost part of yourself. We'll get that back too.
Guilt shot through her.
If all this is anyone's fault, it's mine.
You're so convincing, he said,
wonder in his voice.
I almost believe you.
Another shout.
Yes! Then desperately, yes! Do believe me, because it's the truth, damn it! I'm not working for Deodatus. I'm not trying to force anything on you. I'm just telling you the truth. Can't you see it? Wouldn't you rather it was this way?
Yes, he said sadly. I would.
The knife dropped away from his throat. Leela sighed with relief. She was getting through to him at last. She wondered if she'd be able to get him out of the building. They needed somewhere to hide. She couldn't take him back to her flat. Perhaps she could get them into one of the properties she'd shown recently. She remembered the block she'd shown the awful couple around when her life was so different. That would still be empty. I've got somewhere we could go, she said. Somewhere safe. Ambrose stared at the knife.
That would be good, he replied. Fresh air. The world outside. Get away from this shithole.
He looked up at Leela.
Do you know how much I hate living here? I've made the best of it, but still.
He sighed heavily.
You make stupid, stupid mistakes when you're young. My father told me that when he came. He was talking to me again, at last. But you're saying that wasn't really him.
No, Ambrose. He was finally listening to her. It was a pressure man. Come on, Ambrose. I can take you somewhere safe, and then we can go back to the city and rescue Dieter. Ambrose took a deep breath.
He told me you'd say that. Exactly that. To try and get close to me. To find a way of rewriting me.
And he told me how to avoid it.
He suddenly looked happy, as if a great weight had been lifted from him.
The past is such a beautiful place. You, still yourself. The Lazarus crew still together. And further back, before I fucked up. Even better.
He ran his thumb down the knife's edge. There was red there, too. The blade was very sharp.
It's all I have left.
Oh, no, breathed Leela. And I'm going back there.
Just like Cormac did.
No! Instinct sent her leaping towards him, even though there was nothing she could do. With a quick, liquid flick of his wrist, Ambrose lifted the blade and sliced it across his own neck, starting beneath his left ear and pushing hard all the way round. Blood leapt out in a fine spray. The knife clattered to the floor. He fell sideways, gasping and choking. His head thumped down onto the table. Leela was on him, pressing her hands up against the wound, but they passed through it, and she felt the pain of being a ghost, unable to save the living. Ambrose gurgled, a low, hopeless sound. His eyes were glazed. He slowly rolled onto the floor. A red pool grew around him, the brightest thing in that bleached, hopeless room.
Oh, breathed Leela. Ambrose. Pain and loss seared through her. She took a step back, then another. Then she was in the hallway, then the office. She put a hand to her face and found tears. There was too much loss in her world. She thought of jumping back home, but seeing Dit would only remind her of all she'd failed to protect. She thought of jumping to Cassiel, but then imagined finding that the mind, too, had been rewritten. She couldn't bear another encounter like that. Her friends, too, would remember different yesterdays. For a second she despaired, feeling that she had nobody to turn to. Then she remembered the past she'd tried so hard to write out of her own life. Now it was all that remained to her. It was time to return to the coffin drives. She closed her eyes and let herself fall into the land of the dead.
Chapter 16. Leela came back to herself lying on her side with her eyes shut. She hadn't specified an arrival location, so she'd been brought to the coffin drive's default entry point, Memory Park, the round open space at their very heart. Short grass tickled her face and neck, its fresh green smell rising up around her. Sunlight warmed her skin. Birds poured out their liquid songs. The last time she'd woken here, she'd been lying in a cot in a triage tent, recovering from the blood and flesh plague. Memories rose up and filled her mind. The day of the attack had begun innocently enough. Back then, Leela was still a relatively contented inhabitant of the coffin drives. She rose, summoning memories of coffee, imagining different ways of spending the day. She took a sip from the mug that appeared in her hand and went to the window, wondering if any fresh architectures had been scrawled across the city overnight. But nothing had changed. Everything was quiet. Everything was still. That was surprising. In such a fluid city, stasis was an aberration. Then the plague hit her. First it took her senses. Touch vanished, then taste. The coffee in her mouth lost all heat. Its bitterness disappeared. She gasped. Her mouth was empty. Security blinds crashed down. The room went dark. She called out for emergency lighting. Nothing happened. Hearing collapsed. She was an isolated consciousness, unable to perceive anything beyond itself. Shit, she thought. Be cool. Local crash. Been through this before. Her security systems howled in disagreement. They registered a major personal integrity threat. Defense librarians raced through her memories, throwing up barricades against the aggressor. One by one, they vanished. Leela had a sense of a vast, chaotic force breaking over her like a wave. She withdrew deep into herself. Her remaining librarians rushed to pull deep trivia into a hard, disposable protective shield. Then they frantically pulled the irreplaceable memories that defined her true self in behind it and scrambled to back them up. Leela felt something like corporeal experience return as those memories drifted through her mind. She jumped from moment to moment, forced to relive them in random order. It was a profoundly unsettling experience. Part of her was aware that she was a fetch, under heavy and very personal attack. Part of her was a 20-year-old in a bar, then a 2-year-old spending her first night in a grown-up bed, then a 13-year-old running through long grass. Her sense of self began to fragment. Without any specifically helpful past experiences to stabilize her, fear blossomed. It became panic when the trivia shield was breached. Her defenses vanished. The intruder tore into her, ripping her past to pieces. It attacked coherence, taking individual moments. I'm awake. I'm in bed. I'm sad. Here's mummy. I'm happy. I'm sleepy. And breaking them down into units that made no sense. I'm mummy, sleepy, awake, bed, in, sad, I'm. It was like watching a tsunami racing up beach after beach, overwhelming an entire archipelago of islands. She lost her sense of her real age. She was absolutely 12, then 3, then 17, then 10. Each moment was suffused with a suffocating dread. Then the moment would break, the tsunami taking it, and she would instantly be elsewhere. Every key memory of her life was held up, examined, and torn to shreds. She lived them all as a great howl of panic and loss. An immeasurable period passed, and the destruction passed a tipping point, breaking her sense of self. Leela no longer knew who or what she was. There was only agony. There was no sense of time, and so the agony stretched out to fill eternity. The virus ate a substantial proportion of the coffin drives before a combined fetch totality initiative was able to stop it. In real terms, the whole attack only took a few seconds. Many of those affected were lost for good. Leela was one of the lucky ones. Her librarians managed to save a substantial proportion of her memories. As soon as Dieter cleared enough digital space for her, she left the coffin drives and moved in with him in Docklands. She thought about purging all remembrance of the attack, but settled for just repressing it. It seemed to be the human thing to do. The past finished pulsing through her. Leela was panting with stress. She was filled with an urge to fly back up into Homelands. But there was no safety there. She reminded herself that she needed to be in the coffin drives. She would recover herself, and then work out how to rescue Dieter before he lost any more of himself. She forced herself to breathe slowly, and felt herself calm. She wasn't quite ready to open her eyes yet. She sat up, hands clenching at the soft grass. She still felt tense, and yet, it seemed to be such a beautiful day. A soft, fresh breeze tickled her face. Sunlight warmed her skin. Birds sang. There was a stream somewhere nearby. She took a deep breath and opened her eyes again. The park was as it always had been. The skyline beyond it was still a jumble of buildings. Without moving her eyes, she could see a cathedral built of stained glass. A black leather skyscraper, a brightly painted pagoda, a 100-meter-high granite henge, and a giant yellow elephant dotted across with windows and terraces. She watched for a few minutes, expecting some of the buildings to shiver out of existence and others to appear. But there was no change. The city was more fixed than she'd ever seen it. That, too, helped her relax. Order was so comforting.
Things have settled down since you were here last.
Leela turned. The speaker squatted just behind her. Short, iron-grey hair framed a face that looked like it had been carved out of a walnut. The old woman wore a loose skirt, trousers, and no shoes. Strong toes gripped the grass, giving her stance a deep firmness. Her eyes and mouth were carved out of darkness. It was the Fetch Counselor.
"After the blood and flesh incident," she continued, "we all needed a little stability."
"The buildings don't change anymore?" asked Leela.
"Not very often. Do you want to take a look around?"
"I'm not here to be a tourist."
"I thought not."
The counselor's voice was very serious.
"You're here for help."
Leela opened up her recent memories to the Fetch Counselor. As the counselor experienced her last few days, Leela too thought back over them. So much had assaulted her, and those close to her. Here, in these quiet gardens, it seemed impossible that it had all really happened. And yet, Docklands was now so dangerously unpredictable that the coffin drives felt almost like a refuge. Leela looked around and shivered, remembered how broken she'd been when Dieter signed her out of the triage center. Almost a refuge, but not quite. The Fetch Counselor was pale.
"This is terrible," she said. "I knew that fetches could be rewritten, but the living too. That's shocking news. I'm so sorry you had to go through it all."
"Diodatus hasn't tried to break in here?"
"We've had some unexplained presences."
The counselor looked worried.
"Shadows in the sea, lights in the sky. Too fleeting, too distant for us to scan properly. But nothing in the city itself. I think he's watching from afar. But he must know how good our security is. For now, he's holding back."
"And what if he's inside you and you just don't know it?" The Fetch Counselor smiled.
"Then you'd be surrounded by flies and your memory would already have been rewritten."
The thought shocked Leela. Gods.
"But for the moment at least, whatever Dieter's working on doesn't seem to be a direct threat to the coffin drives."
Leela raised an eyebrow. "He said he could be building an army."
"And we are the discorporate dead. An army would have to prioritize the physical forces of the Pantheon and the Totality before taking us on. Besides, Dieter doesn't need one to damage us. If he chose to attack us head-on, he could break us using software alone."
She looked around. The peaceful afternoon drifted on obliviously around them.
"But we shouldn't talk in an open space like this. Let me take you somewhere more private."
The Fetch Counselor led Leela through the memory park. "Relax," Leela told herself. "It's all in the past." She found herself feeling more and more nervous as they approached the gates to the city.
"Everything's changed. It's safer now."
She remembered how scared Ambrose had been when he'd accompanied her to the Shining City, and how he'd overcome his fear, and felt both guilty and inspired. But when they stepped through the gate and into the streets beyond, her own fear was still there.
"Get yourself ready," the Fetch Counselor told her. "We're about to switch channels."
All of a sudden, the city changed. The skyscrapers, the henges, the silver statues and the cathedrals vanished. Streets bounded by long, low, endless walls flowed into being around them. Each wall was studded with hundreds of doors, and each door was completely different from any of the others. That was meant to happen, right? Leela looked round nervously. "Where's the rest of it gone?"
"Oh, it's still there," the Fetch Counselor reassured her. "We've just changed how we look at it. We've moved into the memory channel."
"I think that's after my time." She forced her breathing to slow again.
"I'm sorry," the counselor smiled. "It is. I should have explained it before we switched. After you left, we started grouping fetches by the kind of afterlives they wanted to lead. When a group's big enough, it gets its own channel to fill with content. This is one of them."
"Who does it belong to?"
"People who want to look back over their lives. Enjoy the good bits, come to terms with the hard times. They hold on to a lot of memories and they like to keep them safe. So the memory channel's built on some of the most stable storage space we have. Multiple backups, deep security. They value privacy too. Once we're through our own particular door, nobody will be able to listen in on us. Let's go find it.
I didn't know about any of this, said Leela as they walked. Regret surprised her. Perhaps she should have stayed more in touch with the evolution of the Fetch Communion.
All this was because of the attack?
The Fetch Counselor nodded.
At first we mistook chaos for freedom. Then the plague came. It helped us realize that freedom and structure are not opposites. That we needed some coherence to make our society safer and more resilient. The channels are part of that.
Leela followed the counselor through the maze of doors, imagining all the different fetches who might be lying behind them, remembering. It was difficult to tell how far they'd actually come when the counselor exclaimed,
"Ah, there it is."
She steered them towards a medium-sized metal door. It was painted red and studded with rivets.
"Our destination."
It opened, and they stepped into a great wooden hallway.
"It's bigger on the inside," commented the counselor. "It has to be, to hold all the memories."
Stairways twisted up through tens of stories of balconies towards a gloomily distant ceiling. Long, low-ceilinged rooms stretched off to the left and right, stuffed full of trunks, cupboards, and other storage systems. There was a table and two chairs in the center of the hall. They faced a stuffed ostrich, a little wooden trike, and two giant six-sided dice, a meter across on each side.
"Wow," said Leela. "That's pretty random." "Meaning is a very subjective thing. They have a lot of significance for the woman I'm riding. This house is a kind of time machine for her."
"You can access her memories?"
"To an extent, but we're not here to discuss her."
Fear was still coiled within Leela. A barbed thing wrapped tight around her mind and heart.
"I need a moment."
"Oh, of course. I completely understand."
She pointed at the wall ahead of them. It opened to show a softly lit, white-walled room furnished with a rug, a sofa, and an armchair. The far wall was a half-cloudscape, half-warm blue sky.
"A memory channel contemplation chamber. One of the safest, most private places we have. Take as long as you need."
On the other edge of the room, Leela turned back.
"I'm glad to be here," she said.
"But doesn't the owner mind us using her home like this?"
"Not at all," replied the counselor. "She volunteered to be ridden. And if she knew you were here now, using this space to renew yourself, she'd be overjoyed."
In the end, Leela only spent a few minutes in the contemplation chamber. She held the pendant in her hand, reminding herself of all that was at stake. As the ambient dread that the coffin drive sparked in her settled, she felt the potential of loss move her to action. The counselor was ensconced in an armchair.
"That was quick," she said as Leela emerged. "Are you sure you're okay?"
"Okay enough," Leela replied. "So, we can get to work. We need to locate the Shining City, find Dieter, and get him out of there."
She paused for a moment.
"I need to know how you can help me."
She was surprised at how confident she felt. She wondered briefly if it was a side effect of wealth.
"And then I'll go and find Cassiel."
The counselor nodded.
"We need to consider Ambrose, too. He's going to have a difficult rebirth. He might not be responsible for his actions, but he'll still remember them, and they'll still haunt him. If we can show him exactly how he was manipulated and who by, it'll make things much easier for him.
And he has some very important information. He knows who Diodatus's next two victims are going to be. He saw their names pinned to the wall in Dieter's workshop. When we talked at the wake, you said you could search the memory seas for fetches awaiting rebirth.
Can you find him?
Normally, yes, replied the counselor. But at the moment, I'm not sure.
We need the names. Then we'd be one step ahead of Diodatus. We can be watching when the pressure men strike, and we can follow them back to the Shining City. Get a location for it, work out exactly what it is, and then go in and get Dieter.
When my expert was searching for Dieter, he felt presences, shadows in the depths, riding new currents. They got close enough to scare him, held far enough back to stay hidden. He came back in a panic, told me he wouldn't go out again until he was sure they were gone.
Can't you talk to him? Change his mind?
I'll do what I can. He's a good man. He knows his duty. That's all I can say.
A pause.
And perhaps we should talk to the gods, too.
Leela grimaced. East wants to turn it all into a reality show. I don't think she'd take it remotely seriously. The rose might have fallen to Diodatus. Holt certainly has. But there's Grey. He helped take down Kingdom. He's a tough cookie. And he was Dieter's patron. I run some of his apps myself.
He's not as tough as he'd like you to think. Breaking Kingdom took a lot out of him. He's still rebuilding himself.
The Fetch Counselor looked worried.
And if the rose has gone down, other gods might have too.
Leela nodded. We'd have no way of telling if Grey had fallen, would we? Until it was too late. Or any of the others come to that.
No, I don't think we would.
I never trusted them much anyway. The counselor nodded.
I think you're right, Leela. For the moment at least, we should keep away from them. At least until we've got a better sense of exactly who Diodatus is. Keep all this between the two of us.
Between the two of us and Cassiel. And she's back in Docklands.
Diodatus might spot you if you go looking for her. And then he'll know that his attack on you failed.
That's why I need a ghost cloak. You're going to set me up with one, and then I'll go after her. Chapter 17 Leela moved silently through the dead hours of the early morning, heading for Cassiel's new office. The dark curve of Docklands rolled up ahead and behind her, roofing in her world. Streetlights glistened above like stars. She glanced out up the spine towards space. Real stars hung there, cold and hard and disinterested. She hoped that the flies hadn't found Cassiel yet. The mind had moved to Roydville, one of Dockland's blander districts. Residential housing gave way to a selection of light industrial facilities and serviced office blocks. Street lighting dropped orange cones of light through pale drizzle. The only people around were gun kiddies, scampering through the darkness, playing invisible games with imaginary enemies. Leela knew that she made no sound, projected no image of herself, left no traces as she moved. The Fetch Counselor had explained how the ghost cloak let her use the Weave's administrative channels to manifest. She was still virtually present in every location she passed through, but nobody there would pick her up unless she wanted them to, because their weaveware skipped over the bland, abstract admin data the white goods of station broadcast through those channels. But it was one thing to know herself to be invisible, another to believe it. She still found herself glancing nervously into every doorway and alley, hesitating before turning each corner. Memories of the pressure man's attack and, before that, the blood and flesh plague were fresh in her mind. She nudged the skullface into existence. At last, she reached Cassiel's new address. The mine's rooms were on the first floor of a small office block. The softest of purple lights glowed from one window. The rest were dark. Leela imagined the mine's body glowing gently in the darkness. She moved to the block's door, glanced up at the camera nest mounted above it, then stopped, waiting for it to open, before remembering that the ghost cloak let her just move through it. Stairs led up into darkness. A moment, and she was at the door to Cassiel's apartment. She thought for a moment about messaging her to announce her arrival, but worried that she might reveal her presence to any watchers. Instead, she just stepped inside. If Cassiel was at home, she'd reveal herself. Otherwise, she'd slip away unseen. She'd quite looked forward to surprising her. She didn't want to think about what she'd do if the mind had fallen to the pressure men. The skullface was a dense weight in her mind, hungry for a target. The apartment cameras were glitched with static, fogging her vision. She moved down the passageway. Memories flared, showing her Ambrose's flat, the last silent space she'd stepped into. Fear buzzed within her. The corridor flickered around her. Every door was closed. She told herself that she wasn't afraid to step through the doors, wasn't imagining all the dark tableau that could lie beyond them. She slipped her audio sensitivity up, straining for any trace of Cassiel. She remembered the soft purple light she'd seen from outside and tried to work out which room it had come from. She nudged her audio feed up again. A low buzzing permeated the hallway, an empty white noise that seemed somehow corrupted. She thought of flies. The fly spray shimmered into being in her hand. The ghost cloak should hide her from them too. That didn't stop the fear. The buzzing came from a door at the end of the corridor. She nerved herself, then stepped through it. One bare light bulb hung down from the ceiling. A dirty blind covered the window, ragged at the edges, stained down its center. A sofa and armchair had been pushed to the walls, a small table between them. There were two pressure men slumped in the chairs, eyes closed, chins collapsed onto chests, pastel suits in antique styles writing the past across them. A wooden box sat on the table. It was crisscrossed with raised strips of wood and dusted with light golden patterns and scuffed weave sigils, but unlike Dieter's box, it wasn't cracked. "Fuck," breathed Leela. The pressure men had pulled their jackets and shirts open to the waist, exposing two square, rotten, wood-bound absences. White specks wriggled within them, consuming decay. Leela was at once sickened and terrified. She couldn't look away. She was invisible to the two of them, so she couldn't